Good morning or afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to amforum.org. I am Amy Sebring and will serve as your moderator today, and we are very glad you could join us. For our newcomers, we will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us. Now, you may be aware that plans are underway for a national test of the emergency alert system. Two previous tests of a presidential message using live codes were conducted in the state of Alaska during January 2010 and 2011, and lessons gathered from that experience. And although the date for the national test has not been set yet, planning has begun, and an online national dialogue on EAS has been underway for the past couple of weeks to identify those areas of the EAS system needing improvement. And tomorrow, there will be two EAS roundtable webinar sessions that you are invited to attend, where industry and government leaders will discuss the results of the dialogue. Now, links to the information about the programs tomorrow and the national dialogue were in your program announcement and, of course, are on our website. Now, for the benefit of our newcomers, we will begin with an overview presentation, and then we will proceed to our Q&A. Now, if you have any difficulty with a live meeting, you can click on the feedback drop-down menu up here at the top right, trying to get my pointer going. There it is. And change your color to indicate that you need assistance, and then my associates, Ava Jean Moore and Lori Weber, will monitor that and try to help you. If they are successful in helping you, please do change your color back to green. We will provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A, but we ask you not to submit your question or comment until we do get to that part of the program. And we also ask you not to send any private messages to the speakers or myself, as we will be busy with the presentation. We are making a recording, which should be available later this afternoon, and we are now making audio-only MP3 versions available. And you can access that directly from our website or by subscribing to a podcast now available from the iTunes Store. And then a text transcript will be posted early next week. Now, if you're not on a mailing list, you can go to our homepage to subscribe, and then you will get notice and links when the materials are ready. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest. Manuel Manny Centeno is a program manager for FEMA's Integrated Public Alert and Warning System Program within the National Continuity Programs Directorate. He is the project manager for the National EAS test and has successfully, obviously, worked on those successful tests in Alaska and also a tsunami warning demonstration in the U.S. Virgin Islands. He is a former emergency services coordinator with the Virgin Islands, a territorial emergency management agency, and has worked in the broadcast industry for 27 years as a broadcast engineer and manager. Again, please do check out today's background page later on for further biographical information. Welcome, Manny. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please. And I will be flipping the slides for Manny today, so you're going to hear a little cueing.
Thank you, Amy, and good afternoon, everyone, and good morning if you're out in the West Coast especially. Thanks for having me today. Today we're going to be discussing the emergency alert system and the emergency alert system national test that we will be conducting later on this year. We're going to also be discussing the importance of testing the EAS at the national, but also at the state and local levels where it is used most. The test activities and accomplishments to date, the EAS tests in Alaska that we've conducted, both tests, and the demonstrations that we've done in the Virgin Islands, and we're also about to do some of that work in Puerto Rico as well. So we've had some outreach and lessons learned. We've been learning through this entire process. We've been gathering technical and operational observations, and we've been documenting those. We've identified some mitigation strategies, and we need to, of course, hear from you so that we can get more of that information so we can better form educational materials to the EAS community. We have some information. We're going to review some of those findings with you briefly today, and also let you know what our next steps and how you could participate in the entire process. So I want to give a little bit of background on the emergency alert system. The EAS was established in 1994 as a replacement for the EBS, the emergency broadcast system that most of you will recall. The FCC began enforcing the EAS rules in 1997. We feel here at FEMA and pretty much our federal partners, including the Federal Communications Commission, that the EAS is a backbone of alert and warning. It reaches more people in more places from a single alert origination. It's also very valuable in rural communities and communities that don't have many other means to receive emergency communications. And the EAS is also extremely resilient. It relies on independent outlets, whether they're television, cable, or radio, and many of these remain on the air even after a disaster. We feel that the EAS must be in a state of readiness at all times. NOAA weather radio, territorial, state, and local governments use the EAS very regularly, some more than the others, but especially NOAA uses the EAS through the FAME, through the NOAA weather radio system to disseminate weather information. This national test that will be conducted later this year will also exercise the pathways used by NOAA, the territories, the states, and the local governments. So although it is a national test using a national code, it will also exercise the networks in the rest of the country, if those networks are up and running. We will not be testing the Common Alerting Protocol this year during this national test. And we just want to make sure that everyone understands that we don't expect that to be fully working by the end of this year to test it. We'll see what happens after we get there. So I want to also make a comment here that the EAS is not the only tool in the alert and warning toolbox, nor is that our thinking. There are other things that FEMA and its federal partners are working on, like alerting over cell phones, using desktop alerts, sirens, etc., which are all will leverage the Common Alerting Protocol. But however, we believe that the EAS is one of the easiest to use, accessible, and resilient. Very simple to use it. So a lot of people ask this question, especially in the emergency management community, why use it? We feel that a single alert message using the EAS can reach millions. And not everyone's watching television or listening to the radio at all times. However, most disasters, most events happen, and people do turn to the radio. Especially drive time, morning time, afternoon, when people are watching network television, that is a good time when the EAS has shown its true value. Also, the EAS has proven its resiliency as many participants continue to operate their system and EAS. We've also learned over the last couple of years, at least, that most of EAS participants are eager to support local, state, and federal authorities in disseminating alerts using EAS. Many are concerned that some state authorities, and in some cases counties, do not understand how this important tool works, and so they don't leverage it. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. FEMA IPAWS is working with several states and territories right now to establish and improve the EAS in those areas, and we're doing that as a model, right, so that we can go out to other states, territories, and areas to help them with their EAS. Next slide, please. So let's talk a little bit about the EAS, and there's a basic diagram that we're presenting here. If you look at the top left of the diagram, you're going to see EAS CAP IP-based. That is the future state of EAS, all right, that will be leveraging the Common Alerting Protocol, the Internet, and other IP-based networks. Just below that, you'll see EAS RF-based. That could also be telephone-based. It could be many other ways to get there. An emergency manager can contact their state primary, for example, and tell them to issue an EAS on their behalf. So there are many ways to do this, but This is kind of what we've recommended to some of the jurisdictions that we've presented to and we're partnering with to get their EAS going. It's an RFA system. It could also be backed up by telephone or satellite. It can also be done over the Internet so that they can reach the EAS over the EAS participant base, which is mainly broadcasters. All right? If you look within the dotted line, you will see EAS participant station, and that could be radio, television, cable. We've kind of simplified and rolled it up into one there. And you see the other sources of alerts could be NOAA. The radio receiver is there so that these participants can receive multiple messages from multiple stations, and that helps eliminate single points of failure, which is something that we hope and that the Common Alerting Protocol will also help with in the future. So if you don't get it over the Internet, you should be able to get it from the other stations that you're monitoring through your monitoring assignments. And we'll talk a little bit about state plans and monitoring assignments a little bit later on in the presentation. And next slide, please. Question we're asked a lot, why are you doing this? Why are we testing the EAS? Well, it's never been done before at this level and in this magnitude. EAS participants are required by the Federal Communications Commission to do weekly and monthly tests, and that's done at a localized level per EAS participant station. Now, some states do choreograph or planned EAS monthly tests, and we believe that that is the way to go at the state level to test their state-level EAS. But we're doing it at the national level to assess the readiness and effectiveness of the EAS from origination to reception by the public. That's from top to bottom. That's end to end. All right? We're going to be assessing real-world EAS distribution networks and monitoring assignments. So we're also looking at the monitoring assignments, and in some, we're going to be doing some sampling when we do the national test later this year to find out how close those monitoring assignments come to reality. We're looking at transmission issues. We're looking at FCC rules, equipment interoperability, and functionality. We're looking at just about everything that we can look at, public reaction, the type of messages we're sending out, are they effective? We're going to be seeking that kind of feedback as well from not only the emergency management community but also and the EAS participant community, but also the public. So what we're doing is establishing a comprehensive baseline so that we can better prepare and execute future tests, both the traditional current EAS we have and the future EAS leveraging Common Alerting Protocol. We also want to establish effective mitigation approaches to improve the EAS, and we started that already with what we have learned from the tests in Alaska, both tests in Alaska and the work we've done in the Virgin Islands and other areas as we continue. So we are already creating a body of information and documentation that will help the entire community identify what those problems are and, most importantly, find solutions to them. So in doing all this, we've also had to implement and assess EAS participant, industry, state and local government, public outreach and engagement activities. This is a very big project, and I know that we haven't been talking about it intimately with the states and the counties just yet. We are very close to announcing the date of the test, and we are in earnest starting our efforts in those areas. We have been doing significant outreach to the EAS participant community, mainly the broadcasters who have the equipment and the systems in their facilities and who are the ones that are going to receive and relay that message. But we will be reaching out to the states and counties and territories, tribal areas, et cetera, about the EAS test. I want to just reiterate that we're not going to incorporate CAP capabilities in this test. So that's not something that we're doing this year. That would be a bit unrealistic to do. Next slide, please. So what have we done already? We've drafted a comprehensive test and assessment plan to provide guidance during the execution of the test. And we continue to upgrade and update that plan with our federal partners and those that are intimately involved with the execution of a national-level EAS message. We continue to update and improve the origination procedures and the messaging that we're going to put within that message within that EAS message later this year, and we're testing those procedures. We've conducted two EAS tests, as Amy mentioned, using a live code emergency action notification. That was in January of 2010 and January of 2011. The emergency action notification live code has never been used nationally. So we tested it. We used it for the first time in a coordinated test in Alaska. There have been some erroneous accidental activations in the past, but, you know, you can't really document an accidental activation. So we need to do this to see how the code works and make sure that that we can mitigate any issues that we find. We conducted significant participant outreach in Alaska and the Virgin Islands. We included important partners, the state level Department of Homeland Security in Alaska, the folks from the Primary Entry Point Station, the Alaska Broadcasters Association. In the Virgin Islands, it's Virgin Islands Territorial Emergency Management Agency, Office of the Governor, et cetera, et cetera. So this is kind of a model of what we will be doing throughout the country as we spread the message out and we continue talking to you. So the broadcast community, the state emergency management community, the state emergency communications committees and the chairs and that entire group is extremely important to this conversation and the planning of the EAS test. So you will be hearing more from us if you're in those communities. What we found everywhere we've gone is that not only in Alaska, but in Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, the folks that we're talking to, several of the other states right now that we're engaging, we started engaging with, is that they're very enthusiastic about their support. And we're seeing that over and over. There are people that don't believe that this is necessary, and that's okay. We respect that opinion. However, the vast majority of folks want to see a working EAS, and that is the purpose of all of this. So we did a lot of outreach activity in Alaska and the VI. We released PSAs. We responded to media requests. We conducted interviews, assisted in the drafting of news releases at their level, et cetera. And what we've done is we've been learning how to conduct this test by using these two locations as a model to then basically spread out throughout the United States. It will not be identical, but we've learned a lot as we go. So we are preparing and developing instructions, technical instructions, configuration instructions, preparation instructions for EAS participants so that they can set up these devices properly. One of the biggest issue we found overall is at the local station level where, the equipment has been sitting for a very long time. If the system is not exercised or tested frequently, in an organized fashion, right, from an originator outside of that EAS participant station, they don't receive a message. They don't know if they can relay it. It's very difficult for those folks to know if their system is working, even if they do weekly tests and monthly tests from the station. So we're gonna be publishing this information very soon to the participants so that they're aware. Next slide, please. One of the findings that we had in 2011, January, we conducted a test in Alaska on the 26th of January, was that more stations transmitted the EAS test message this year than last year. This tells us that the EAS can be improved when properly tested and exercised, and we'll get into some of those mitigation elements a little bit later on in our presentation. So the EAS, we proved that the EAS can be updated, can be fixed. We also saw in the Virgin Islands that you can go from zero to something in a very relatively short time, where the stations did have the equipment, right? But the territorial government was not necessarily originating alerts, all right? So we went from them not doing that to them testing it out for the first time and it working. So we went, as I like to say, from zero to 60 in very little time. So now they have the beginnings of a viable EAS in that area. This can be done, and that's our message. We can get this done. So another accomplishment is that we've established a strong baseline for more effective preparation and execution of a national test. We've learned a lot in the last year and a half or two since we've started talking about doing this. We've seen increased cooperation and partnership with the state governments, the EAS participants, and the manufacturers of equipment in the EAS space. We've seen more robust pre-test exercises. We've done those. We've had quite a few dry runs. That better informs EAS participants as well. The more you practice, the better you get. We've conducted numerous EAS outreach and many workshops to EAS participants. We did quite a few of those at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention this year. We've visited numerous states so far and been to Broadcasters Association meetings, Society of Broadcast Engineers. Some of those states include Michigan. We're going to be in Nevada next week. We're going to be in New Jersey the week after. Of course, we did Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico and Alaska. And so we're starting to get that list populated and visiting those folks so that we can engage with them to make to create a better EAS and prepare for the test. Next slide, please. Amy, this is where we want to play that video. This is an example of the cooperation that we've seen in the state of Alaska. The Alaska Broadcasters Association, the State Division of Homeland Security, were able to recruit the help of U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. I'm not sure we're going to do a whole lot of this type of TSA nationally. However, there is a lot of support for this type of event. There's a lot of support for the EAS. And I just wanted to show you this 30-second clip here that with Senator Murkowski informing the public of the EAS test this year in Alaska and asking them to participate and provide feedback to the State of Alaska Emergency Management Agency. Amy, if that's ready, that would be great.
Let me run that now. Please stand by.
Thank you.
Take a moment for folks.
Here it comes. So there will be similar campaigns for the national test, for the full-blown national test that will be conducted later this year. It may not have a Senator Murkowski, but we do plan to go out to the public with this information so that they're not alarmed when they get this message, so that your 911 call centers are not inundated with calls with folks that are unduly concerned. So there will be a public outreach campaign with the national test. In addition to the outreach and education that we're doing, engagement that we're conducting with you and with the other EAS participants. Next slide, please. So let's get a little bit about some of the other stuff that we're done in addition to Alaska. On March 23rd of this year, the Virgin Islands conducted a tsunami drill, a tsunami exercise, and interestingly, this happened right after the Japan disaster, but it was already planned. It was called Lantex 11 Carib Wave 2011. It simulated a widespread tsunami warning throughout the Caribbean Basin, and which required the origination of a local tsunami alert, and of course, the activation of response plans, etc. It simulated a major earthquake and an emergency alert system live code using the TSW tsunami warning code was sent out to EAS participants. About 33 countries participated in this, so this was an international event, which also included their alert and warning capabilities at those in those countries. The test determined effectiveness and readiness of authorities, especially in this case, the NOAA folks, to warn the public in the event of a major disaster. The test lasted approximately 2 minutes on the air. EAS participants and broadcasters to the monitor NOAA weather radio to receive these messages. And we were able to prove, this is one of the things I was saying earlier, is we were able to prove that we could take an EAS that's been dormant and not exercised, not practiced, and actually refresh it and make it work. Now, of course, we also have to continue, and they, at their level, have to continue working to improve that and to practice it and exercise it. But it's good to provide that spark and that push, and that's one of the things that we want to do with many of our alert and warning communities out throughout the country. Next slide, please. So here's, you're seeing this slide again, but now you see the word VITEMA there, which stands for Virgin Islands Territorial Emergency Management Agency. VITEMA is currently working, let me just say this before I continue. We work closely with the VI. I worked with this agency. That's where I'm originally from. And so we wanted to have an example of a large state like Alaska with a huge geographical area, a well-practiced and exercised EAS, a strong broadcast and EAS participant community. We wanted to do that in Alaska. We had success there. But we also wanted to do this in an area that wasn't doing this before, that is just getting very serious about their emergency management and alert and warning. They know the importance of this, and they came to us and said, please help us out. Let's see if we can get this done. So we saw this other angle down in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and it's a different environment. It's a different dynamic, and we wanted to see if we could make this work there as well, and it did work. We went there and we suggested this approach to them, as you see on your screen, and that is being worked out. We tested the top part with CAP. We sent the first required monthly test from the State Emergency Operations Center using CAP, going through the IPAWS gateway or aggregator, which is the first time that was done live, and it worked. It worked with not a whole lot of hassle. The real message here is if the state or locality wants to use it, if they want to engage in originating alerts and sending them out over EAS, it's very easy to do and it doesn't cost much money. So I just want to reiterate that point. I want to push that point across for those jurisdictions that are not using EAS that you can do it. It's another source of information, emergency alert information, to your public. Next slide, please. So let's go a little bit into some of the technical issues that we found in the last two Alaska tests and some of the work we did in the VI. Because the EAS had never been tested in an organized and planned fashion, especially at the national level, we wanted to see how this stuff would work. I don't think anyone really knew. There's been discussion and debate over many, many years that the EAS works, that the EAS doesn't work, that it has a lot of problems. We found that it has its issues, but we also found that they can all be mitigated with some time and attention. So, you know, when we did the first test in Alaska, FEMA sent the wrong ORC code, which in EAS is basically the code that's used to identify the organization that's sending the message. That caused some issues. The second bullet in that slide, you see main cable head-in, did not air the EAN. Well, they didn't air the EAN because we sent the wrong ORC code. Most EAS participants did, because if it's an EAN, they ignored that. But we corrected that issue in 2011. We, as I was saying earlier, we mitigated our origination procedures for the most part. And we were successful in getting that cable head in to send out the EAN. And that's important because cable, in many areas, retransmits or relays the EAN and other EAS messages to other EAS participants. So it's important that cable works properly, not just for that, but also for the viewers. So we also corrected many of the origination procedures, and we continue to work towards improving that at the national level. This is very similar. Our origination procedures are almost exactly those of that would use be used in a state or county. We do have some special considerations given that this is a national message. However, origination is origination. And following procedures is extremely important, and practicing them is extremely important. State-level monitoring assignments are extremely important to the EAS community. We found that many of the participants did properly monitor. Others only monitored a source. If that source was unavailable, then they didn't pass the message on. That's an issue of public safety right there. So we are encouraging, based on our findings, that monitoring assignments need to be followed, they need to be reviewed, they need to be tested. The Federal Communications Commission mandates that two sources be available to that box for it to receive an EAS message, especially in the case of an emergency action notification for a national message. We found issues of low audio quality and amplitude. We improved some of that from the 2010 test to the 2011 test. That still needs help, both in our, on our side, originating the message, but also from the EAS participant level. And we are discussing that with the technical folks in the industry and the Federal Communications Commission to see if we can come up with some very good, solid, tangible solutions to it. We saw in television text crawl inconsistencies, the position of the crawl, the size, the colors, etc. We'll get a little bit into that as we continue the presentation today. But that's important, and it's extremely important to our folks that have visual problems, here are visually impaired or have some disabilities in that area. That's very important. If you see a crawl running across very fast and it's a certain background color with certain letters on it, that's going to impact the folks with access and functional needs negatively. So that is extremely important. That is something we're talking to the FCC to include in their future rulemaking, but also something that's going to require the best practice approach as well, and we will be talking more about that in a few months and in the next year or so. This is not a quick fix. Washington, D.C. FIPS code, Federal Information Processing Standard code, is used for national activation. Reason is that there is no national FIPS code. There's no U.S. FIPS code. So back in 1994-95, it was decided to use the D.C. FIPS code for the national activation of the EAS. We've seen some equipment manufacturers work with the FIPS code from D.C. well within an EAN. Others are working with us to remedy some issues that we found. Last year, we saw some duplicate EAN broadcasts, mainly caused by equipment programming and configuration based on their interpretation of FCC rules. We saw a big improvement in 2011. Some software updates were sent that eliminated the duplication of those EAN broadcasts so that you didn't have an endless loop of messages going through. We also saw the biggest issue, which was device installation, training, configuration, and operation of the equipment at the local EAS participant level. So that is going to be a strong technical outreach and education campaign. That starts tomorrow with the EAS participant roundtable. And we're going to discuss the sessions that we have tomorrow. There will be several of these between now and the test. And those are mainly for technical and operational issues, but also regulatory issues at the state and local levels and partnership issues between broadcasters and state and local authorities so that we can have these discussions and we come up with best practices and solutions-based approaches to these issues that we're seeing with the EAS. So, and finally, as we wrap up this section here, the DTV, the digital television subchannel EAS, you know, when there was a transition from analog to digital television, some of that somehow didn't work very well for the EAS. I think for the most part, the main DTV channel carries the EAS. We've seen in many instances the subchannels not carrying the EAS message. So next slide, please. Let's get a little bit, and Amy, if you want to prepare the audio file I sent you, this is, I'm going to play you a piece of the audio as it was broadcasted this year in Alaska on January 26th of the EAS message. Just so you can hear what it sounded like. We had some dead air that we've mitigated, and we've worked with. But Amy, if you have that audio, if you could play it, it'd be great.
Okay, I've got it ready now. Here we go.
So that's that dead air that we're indicating in that slide. All right, so Amy, if that's okay if we switch that off. Now, I just wanted to give the audience an opportunity to hear what happened with that message in Alaska. We did have some issues that we're mitigating. We had some noise issues, as the slide that you're looking at indicates. We had that big 20 seconds of silence, and we had some issues with the actual reading of the message. We are working to make sure that that doesn't happen in the actual national test, that this message is clear, concise, and to the point. Sometimes you practice things over and over and over, and when it's time to do them, they don't work out perfectly, but this has to work well. Next slide, please. So audio quality, that noise, the actual quality of the sound itself is important. And we're working with not only our origination, message origination folks at the federal level, but also with the FCC to try to come up with some language that helps emergency managers and message originators to do this a little bit better. This happens everywhere. It happens at any level, at the state level, the local level, the national level. The audio quality of the message is extremely important. Next slide, please. So we spoke earlier about monitoring assignments. If we looked at what we saw in Alaska, many of the issues that we found were local primary ones or LP1s not relaying the message. This was, in fact, in some cases due to the fact that they were only monitoring one source. In some cases, they only had one source to monitor. And so, you know, folks are working to mitigate that. But in many cases, it was another source was available. The other source was relaying the message, but at the local station level, that source was not being monitored. So that LP1 failed to, and in many cases, well, in this case this year, several LP1s failed to monitor, properly monitor and relay the message, which caused the stations that were monitoring them to not transmit the message. Next slide, please. We're talking about the EAN crawl. If you're watching television and you get an EAS message, you will, if you flip from station to station, if they're carrying an EAN, you'll notice speed differences, the duration that the crawl is up, the colors, size, and content are all different in many cases. So we need a better understanding of this video crawl mechanism. We're working very closely with the FCC on this. We're working with our laboratory, the Joint Interoperability Test Command, to support and improve understanding, and we can find solutions to this problem with industry as well. So I think we need more specific rules and better understanding of the EAS crawl. Next slide, please. And here you can see the difference. If you look upper left, you can hardly read that. And if you have problems seeing especially with television. And that's not just folks, you know, if I take my glasses off, I can't even read what's there. So it's we got to make it bigger. We got to make it clearer. If you look at the upper right, colorblindness, for example, is a big issue. If you look at the upper right, you can read that a little better. If you look at the lower, the middle picture, you know, what is the specification for this? Who decides? And that's kind of the issue that we're seeing with the EAN crawl. Next slide, please. This is the biggest problem right here, device installation and operation, configuration, wiring, lack of redundancy, tuning of a receiver. If, you know, if you don't check that receiver and make sure it's tuned to the proper station or it's tuned to a station at all, you're not going to get that message. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time getting through the technical part of this, but I just want to let you know that these are the findings that we're seeing that are very get into the nitty-gritty technical aspect of the EAS. Next slide, please. DTV, digital television, as I was mentioning earlier, very important to this. There's digital television now has multiple channels that you can watch. If the EAS message isn't carried in all those channels, the audience, the public, the viewers will miss a very important warning message. So we're urging DTV to help us find solutions in this area. Satellite television, we've got to work closely with them to make sure that not only the national message gets out, but also, I mean, how do you get a state message to go out on DTV? You know, normally you would get it through the local or state television station that is going through satellite, but what if you're watching CNN or something like that? Is that getting interrupted with a state-level message or a local-level message? So those are questions that are being asked that we seek to answer and to debate and answer in the next few months. We're not going to solve all the issues we're finding before the test, but we want to start discussing them now. Cable operations, cable interrupt, when forced tuning, how does that work? Can we make that mechanism better? Can we improve upon it? Next slide, please. So let's summarize a bit on what we found in the last few tests, that the main reason the EAN test message was neither received or relayed was in large part due to individual and localized technical malfunctions. In some cases, we had actual electronic failures. You can't predict those. You know, your light bulb will pop and go out without any kind of warning. This happens, too, with electrical and electronic components. So we had bad power supplies, distribution amps, but also we had that monitoring issue. And we had misconfigured devices and mistuned receivers that connect to these devices. Operational plans and procedures at the state level should be closely followed by EAS participants and broadcast stations and cable, et cetera, because of that monitoring source issue. What we found that was very positive was that the cooperation in these jurisdictions that we've been working with were excellent. The relationship between the EAS participants, the broadcast community, and the state government was tremendous. And we would like to see more of that at every level across the country. And I know that there are limitations and challenges to that. And if you have those challenges, it'd be good if you let us know. Maybe we can help, and maybe we can provide some examples to get there. I don't think that there is no situation that is unwinnable. We can make this happen. The outreach that we conducted in Alaska was very adequate, very well done. The public knew what was up. Nobody got surprised. No one was unduly concerned. Next slide, please. As we continue with the summary, last year in 2010, we had about a 64%, maybe 65, results, folks that the stations that broadcasted the event. We monitored about 119 stations last year and this year as well. This year we got 81%. So we saw a huge improvement based on the work that the broadcast community, the EAS participants, and the state government, the broadcaster association there, based on all that work, we conducted workshops, we provided technical best practices, and we saw a big improvement. Anchorage, Alaska, which has the largest population in Alaska, showed that 94% of participants aired the EAN, and that's good to know. Next slide, please. So we learned a lot, and we're about to head into the Q&A part, the question and answer section of this, but incremental testing is critical to incremental improvement of the EAS at all levels, not just the national level. And I'm emphasizing all levels because the national EAS doesn't work as well if the state EAS doesn't work. So we want to help the states by doing this, get the states and the counties to see how their EAS is working and improve it as we go. Outreach efforts were very positive and provided good results. Public undue concern was not an issue. People didn't go panicking all over the place. That's not something that we saw in any of the tests and demonstrations we've done. The cooperation between all participants was great. We noticed that procedures and rules at all levels require updating, including our origination, FCC rules, et cetera, all of that needs to be updated. We can't just do it in a day. We just can't do it in a year, but we need to start doing it. So participants require additional training. We're going to be working with the FCC and you to provide this orientation training and information to all participants through EAS handbooks, the workshops that we're doing, the bulletins, blogs, and events such like this. Next slide, please. So we're going to continue doing what we're doing, which you've heard me speak about for the last close to an hour. We're going to continue supporting the FCC's EAS rulemaking process. We encourage you to write to the FCC, to comment to the FCC's requests for information as they are right now, opening windows for that. Please review your monitoring assignments at the state levels. Work with the broadcast community and EAS participants. Participate in increased training and technical efforts. We are going to start those in earnest. We've already started, but you're going to hear a lot more about this. We're going to continue doing demonstrations. We're working with several jurisdictions right now to do so. And we're going to continue operation planning for the national test later this year. One of the things I wanted to make sure that we plugged during this conversation is tomorrow, starting at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time, between 12:30 and 1:50 Eastern time, we're going to have session one of the EAS Participant Roundtable. And we're going to be discussing mainly AM, FM, and digital radio during that session. And we have some very good partners in this, representatives of major broadcast and EAS participant organizations, the National Association of Broadcasters, the Society of Broadcast Engineers, National Alliance of State Broadcasters Association, American Cable Association, et cetera, Alaska Broadcasters Association, the folks from Michigan, and I can go on and on. There's quite a few on that list. In the afternoon, 2:30 to 3:50, we're going to have session two, which will cover topics for digital television, cable, and satellite. So we urge you to join us there. If you go to the FEMA website, you can get more information, and I believe that Amy has information on that as well, and we can send you a calendar invitation for that to remind you if you'd like us to. If you write to us. Next slide, I think we're close to being wrapping up. And yep, that's my bit of information. If anyone wants to write, call, I'm available to discuss anything you'd like. I know this meeting has been well attended, and I am very happy to see that. Amy, thank you so much for letting us speak to the group today and inform them of what we're doing. And I hope that this information has been valuable to them.
That was excellent, Manny. We will have a little bit of time here for Q&A. I will come back to this contact information at the very end, so folks will have time to jot it down. Now, to submit a question or comment, just click on Q&A from the top, type in the top half of the box, and click on Ask. There's a hand-raising feature there, but we do not use that feature. It will not appear directly on the bottom part of your screen, but I will be monitoring on an admin panel. I will read the question out loud, and then our guest will respond via the bridge. Please do try to keep your question fairly concise so we can get to as many of them as we can. And you will only be able to submit one question or comment at a time. So we do have a few ready to go. And one for me, will the PowerPoint be available to download or print? I will be mentioning that again in the wrap-up. Get on our mailing list, and you will get the links to it, and we will have that PowerPoint for you. Okay, let's see. I have a question from Tom Fahey, and he asks, how can interested organizations or individuals participate in the EAS roundtable discussions that Manny referenced? And I will take a crack at that. Also, in the meeting notice or on the background page, there is a link to the invitation. It will be held in live meeting. It's a different URL from our emforum.org, but if you are able to connect successfully to EM Forum, you should be able to connect. So there is an open invitation on that.
And if you don't mind me adding something to that, Amy, we're also going to be inviting folks like Tom to workshops and webinars that we're going to have between now and the test and beyond that. So, Tom, expect a call from me.
I've got one question asking for clarification from Isabel McCurdy, who does not have the technical background, and she's asking, I'm still not understanding what monitoring assignments means. Would you clarify this?
Absolutely. Each EAS participant within regulated broadcast entities, these are radio stations, televisions, television stations, cable, head ends, satellite broadcasters, if I can use that word, et cetera, have to, are mandated by FCC rules, specifically Part 11 of those rules, to relay and transmit a message, a national EAS message. Those stations can also volunteer to participate in a state-level EAS. So the monitoring assignments is, for example, if the state EOC is issuing an alert, it will likely go to a state primary, right, or a station designated as the main station, okay? Now, the monitoring assignments is tell the broadcaster which station they're supposed to monitor or receive the message from. So they take a radio, like just very similar to the radio you have in your car, and they tune it to the station that it's indicated in that list, and that's the monitoring assignments. That message that they get is inputted or connected to their EAS device, and the EAS device recognizes the tones and automatically puts the message on the air. So the EAS monitoring assignments is who you're supposed to listen to get that message.
Good. Okay, I think that's a related question from Robert Gass, who asked, are all sub-channels required to carry the EAS test?
According to FCC rules, yes. If you are regulated FCC entity, a broadcast entity, yes, according to the rules, from my interpretation, you are to carry the EAS message. I think the question is EAS test. I just want to be specific to the question because I don't know if the intent was to mention all the EAS tests. But for the national test, because it is a live code EAN, sub-channels are expected to carry that EAN.
Okay.
So I'll make it specific to that.
Right. And I believe that was the intent. Okay, a question from Paula Tucker, who picks up on what you discussed about the crawls. She says, regarding the captions crawls, have you worked with any groups of deaf consumers to determine what is the preferred style of captions? For example, the PSA with Ms. Mikowski used a captioning style that was difficult to read and not at all what deaf people are used to seeing.
Exactly, and we understand that some may not even be able to read certain things, and you know we've been talking to a lot of organizations and groups on how to better form that crawl. EAS does have its limitations as it currently exists, so we are working with different organizations to get there to research this. This is why we're testing it, is to find out what's there, first of all, but also so that folks such as the participant today can ask that kind of question. So it makes us aware of some of the things that we may be missing. And we certainly don't have all the answers. So, we look forward to hearing more from the community so that we can better inform ourselves about this.
Right. We have time for just a couple more. I have one from Daryl Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Will you share test procedures and parameters with manufacturers, and he's referring to manufacturers of the encoder-decoders, in advance of the planned national test so that manufacturers may assist customers in the proper installation, configuration, and operation in order to mitigate some of the technical malfunctions that were experienced in Alaska?
Absolutely, Daryl. As a matter of fact, I think you've been in touch with some of our folks down at the Joint Interoperability Test Command, JITIC. That's the IPAWS lab, and so they are our partner. We actually fund that lab. So we will be working with you very closely. As a matter of fact, I met with JITIC last week, and they are going through some documentation of what they're seeing with not only the older legacy equipment, but also the newer equipment, and they will be in touch, and we will be in touch with you very soon to discuss some of those items that you mentioned, if not all of them. But we plan to work closely with you for the test to make sure that we're all informed, and we also know your concerns.
I have a comment from Bud Johnson, and then I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up. He says, I've always been concerned about the broadcasting of alerts, especially severe weather notifications, when the viewer is watching satellite or cable TV. I'm glad to see you are addressing this. Great presentation.
Great. Thank you so much. And that's a big issue. And I think, all of these different segments of the EAS community and mass media, electronic mass media groups and entities want to solve this. There are some very specific technical challenges to get a lot of this, get this information from like a county level to a satellite system. So that is something that needs to be debated over time and see if we can come up with better ways to do this. There are also other issues. Sometimes you are watching television, whether it's, I haven't seen it on satellite, but I've seen it on cable, where they may take away something very informative like the weatherman on a radar, and I've seen this myself, and it force-tunes it to something else that isn't as descriptive and as informational, given the fact that you may just get a tornado drop on you. So all of these things, that's one of the reasons for the roundtables, for the workshops and webinars, for the visits that we're doing. We are starting especially for cable, we're working with a major cable operator to put together a sandbox so we can do research and we can experiment with some of these issues. And we hope to be working with the satellite community as well to try to find ways to insert certain messages into the programming for those subscribers. So we were happy that you're asking this, and we're glad you're participating.
I want to wrap up with one question of my own, Manny. Which is, no, it's not a hard question. All right. My understanding is that everyone will have a minimum of 2 months advance notice on the test. Is that correct?
Yes. The FCC has committed in their documentation to provide the 2 months advance official notice.
Right. Right.
Now,
it's not like you're going to find out that it's going to be next week or anything. Folks,
no, this can't be done. It can't be. That would be unrealistic, and it'd be an insult to our partners. So we will give them ample time to prepare. That's why we're doing all this now, is to get them going. There are also, many audiences and partners and groups that we need to address between now and then. So we're going to be running fast and hard in the next few months getting all this done. But that is an important thing. Everyone's going to have sufficient notice, and we're going to make ourselves available for any questions or concerns.
Right. And if we did not get to your questions today, folks, you do have Manny's contact information there, and I'm sure he'd be happy to help you. It is time to wrap for today. Thank you very much, Manny. That was excellent. We appreciate you taking the time again to be with us, and we wish you good luck in your future efforts.
Thank you.
You've got a big job ahead.
Thank you so much. We're happy to do it. Don't forget the roundtables tomorrow. We look forward to seeing you there, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Good deal.
Take care.
Again, the video and the audio recording should be available later this afternoon, and the slides. If you're not on our mailing list and would like to get notices of our future sessions and availability of the materials, just go to our homepage to subscribe. Now, before you go, please take a moment to do the rating form. We are just asking you to rate the relevance of the information to you, and this helps us, guides us in our future programming. Our next program will take place Wednesday, June 22nd. Please do watch for our announcement and plan to be with us then. And until that time, thanks to everyone for participating today. Have a great afternoon. We are adjourned. Bye, everyone.